evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, August 24th, 2015. President Kiir holds a meeting with top officials about signing the peace deal, while the SPLM in opposition spokesman says he hopes Mr. Kiir signs by the new deadline.
We hope that he will try to explain to them the importance of ending the war, of signing the peace agreement, so that the suffering of the people can come to an end. So if this will be the reason for the meeting, we would welcome this.
And South Sudan Minister of Information says President Kiir did not order the killing of journalists.
The government has nothing and is not a party to whatever to the death of the journalists. And I should also inform you that all the people who are dying here in Juba, being killed by the criminals, are not being killed by the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir held a marathon meeting with top South Sudan government officials about the IGAD peace plan. But one top official says they have yet to decide whether the president should sign the compromise peace deal. VOA fellow Kaltuma Venisa has more from Washington.
IGAD mediator gave President Kiir an additional 15 days to meet with his constituency before signing the compromise peace deal. Today, President Kiir held a six-hour meeting at the State House to consult with all the 10 governors and other senior government officials on whether he should sign the agreement. South Sudan Minister of Cabinet Affairs Elias Lomoro says they still have not made a decision.
Critically record the details of our concerns in the compromise peace agreement. And after very lengthy discussions, we were taken through the issues of contention, the issues that have made us, our president, not to sign the agreement. And so it is agreed that we enlist our concerns and then return back to the same group of people who are the leaders of South Sudan to make our final decisions as to whether or not we will sign the proposed compromised peace agreement.
Mr. Kiir held a similar meeting last Sunday before heading to Addis Ababa, where he was expected to the agreement. But shocked onlookers and the international committee by refusing to sign on Monday. Rebel leader Riek Machar and former political detainee and newly reinstated SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amun both signed the compromise agreement. Lomoro says the consultation have focused on areas the government believes are of concern.
Particularly on the issues of the security arrangements, we have concerns there. We have concerns on the question of giving the greater upper states to the rebels, and even now giving them further 15% in all the states and excluding the political parties in all of this arrangement.
Lomoro did not say when the government would make a final decision on signing the deal. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said last week he received the assurance from Mr. Kiir that he would sign the agreement by the time his 15 days are up. James Gadet Dark, spokesman for Machar's SPLM in opposition, says he hopes that Mr. Kiir will move the peace process forward.
We hope that he will try to explain to them the importance of ending the war, of signing the peace agreement, so that the suffering of the people can come to an end. So if this will be the reason for the meeting, we would welcome this.
The two warring parties have been engaged in on and off peace talks for 19 months. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
Nabil Biagio contributed to that report from Juba. The U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, is traveling to Khartoum tonight to speak with Sudanese officials about the conflict in Darfur and other contentious issues affecting U.S. bilateral relations with Sudan. This is Ambassador Donald Booth's second visit to the country. The U.S. State Department is calling it a routine diplomatic effort to build relationship and strengthen diplomacy. Booth is scheduled to address the humanitarian crisis in the Darfur region. The Sudan Foreign Ministry says they will also discuss the IGAD compromise peace deal in South Sudan. His visit comes 1 week prior to the second deadline IGAD had set for South Sudan President Kiir to sign the deal. Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs says Booth has planned to speak with government officials about their role in helping South Sudan broker a peace deal. A State Department spokesman says Booth is not scheduled to meet with President Omar al-Bashir, but will meet with top Sudanese officials. Booth's visit comes days after the United Nations published a report about the Sudanese government's failure to address human rights violations in Darfur. The report urges Sudanese government to investigate the violence in Darfur. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or SPLM North, is calling on Booth to increase pressure on the Sudanese government to recognize its role in committing repeated humanitarian violations. The group says there is a new wave of refugees in Darfur as a result of government militia who are targeting civilian population. SPLM North is calling on Booth to pressure the Sudan government to allow its citizens to enjoy basic human rights. The Office of the Special Envoy says Booth is aware of those concerns of human rights violations in Darfur. Booth is also scheduled to speak with Sudanese members of civil society organizations in efforts to end the ongoing conflict. Booth is expected to return to U.S. on August 29. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei says the statement threatening journalists, which President Kiir made before leaving for Addis Ababa for the final hours of peace talks, was taken out of context. He says there was never any intention to intimidate or harm journalists.
It is worth mentioning that the government has nothing and is not a party to whatever, to the death of the journalists. And I should also inform you that all the people who are dying here in Juba, being killed by the criminals, are not being killed by the government, but by criminals whose background, who are at times not apprehended. The fact that the journalist became unfortunate and he died and he was shot by the unknown criminals does not necessarily mean that it is the government who killed him.
Makuei says the government also condemns the killing of Moi, who worked for South Sudan's corporate newspaper.
The government condemned it from day one. Okay, or you want it to be condemned by me? The Minister of Justice condemned it.
Moi is the seventh journalist to be killed this year in South Sudan. His body was found in a residential part of Juba just days after President Kiir made his threat to reporters. Moi had been shot several times, including in the back. No suspect has been arrested. Makuei says an official investigation is underway. Philip Thonaleu contributed to this report. Meanwhile, the SPLM in opposition is accusing South Sudanese government forces of launching new attacks on rebel position in Unity State. My colleague Karen Zaivoko has this report from Washington.
James Gadet Dak is a spokesman for SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar. He says Sunday's attack targeted the town of Nialdu.
This is a garrison. It is south of Bentiu, about 30 kilometers from the capital. It has been a position of our forces for quite a long time. The government has been attacking it several times, sometimes uprooting our forces, and then we would come back and repel them and recapture the place.
Dak says the opposition forces this time were able to repulse the government forces and drive them back to Bentiu.
We captured a number of weapons from the government forces and also killed a number of their soldiers, although the actual number has increased from the initial figure, which was given to me yesterday, which was about 15 people. But I'm told the number has increased although I have not confirmed yet the total figure.
DAC says the SPLM-IO has had reports that civilians were caught up in the fighting and killed as the government forces retreated.
They killed some of the civilians they came across, whom they accused of supporting us, of not telling them that our forces were in that position. And we could not have ascertained the number of casualties on the civilian side, but we received reports that a number of civilians were killed.
The attack and the reported civilian deaths came a week after Machar and former detainee Pagan Amum signed a peace deal for South Sudan. President Kiir did not sign that deal, and as you just heard, he indicated today that he is still holding talks with his inner circle to decide if he will sign it by next week's deadline. DAC says the SPLM-IO believes the attack on Nyaldu is
part of the tactic of the plan by the government to try to derail the Dole peace process. We sign it because we are committed to the peace process. We want the war to end. But the other side does not want the war to end, according to our assessment. And this is part of their plan to try to spoil whatever achievement has been made in Addis Ababa so that they can try to make some excuses that the war is on, that we are still fighting them when they are them attacking us and we are only defending our position. So definitely it is part of the government's plan to try to drain the peace process.
SPLA spokesman Philip Aguer says the rebels launched the attack on Nyaldu, which he says is a government-held position. Aguer says the SPLA was able to recapture the garrison town after several hours of fighting. He dismissed the rebel claims as rubbish and propaganda. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
Nabil Biaje contributed to that report from Juba. Authorities in Western Equatoria State say they have launched an investigation into search for a known gunman who killed the Speaker of the State Parliament, James Bage Elisa. As VOA fellow Justin Tito reports from Washington, a government spokesman says restoring peace in South Sudan is the only way to end the killings.
State Minister of Information Charles Kisanga says the incident happened 5 kilometers away from Yambio in a bridge called Uze when a known gunman ambushed James Bage's car and shot him dead last Friday night. He was coming from a meeting with the SPLM secretary of Gagra Payam. His bodyguard escaped but could not identify the attackers. Kisanga has condemned the attack and says the gunmen are still at large. He says intelligence agents are conducting the investigation.
The local police are there, which are headed by their commander, the security, the national security, because it is fire. You need some intelligence to get this, and then involving the commissioner and the others in the county.
The state speaker was killed just a day after a journalist was assassinated in Juba, whose murder is also unsolved. Kisanga says the guns are spreading because of the war in the country.
This is mostly when the country is facing insecurity, where there is no peace and there is war, there is a proliferation of arms, and these arms get to so many hands that people are even scared to move at night, while the security forces officials may be making one patrol, there are other people with guns moving around, and then they become unknown gunmen because it is like almost so many guns now in the hands of people because of the war.
Sapana Abui is the deputy governor and acting governor of Western Equatoria State. He says the people of the state are outraged and frightened at the same time.
The parliament and the executive and the whole people of Western Equatoria are in a sorrowful mood and also confused because such kind of assassination or killing had never happened here. So we don't know whether it was just a criminal act or it is a targeted killing. Those are the things that we don't know yet.
Kisanga says peace is the only way to end killings in the country.
restoring peace and bringing a war to an end one way or another is the one that can really guarantee peace for everybody and guarantee that that incident is can easily be identified and it should not be increasing, it should be decreasing.
For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Ugandan veteran politician is warming up for elections. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite drink?
My favorite drink is cranberry juice, and the reason why is that it washes my system and is good for me as a woman because it helps with my menstrual cycle.
Pineapple juice. I like it because it tastes very good and also it gives me a lot of vitamins.
I normally take soft drink, soda, because I'm allergic to some drinks, maybe like alcohol. I have no interest to, and some other company, because most of the drinks have been produced in companies whereby they're not well purified. So we don't trust them sometimes. That may be the reason why.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi says he's running as an independent candidate in the presidential election in Uganda next year. Mbabazi says he has been forced to run as an independent because the ruling National Resistance Movement, or NRM, of which he has been a member for the past 30 years, changed the rules when he said he would seek party nomination. Mbabazi spoke by phone from Kampala with VOA's James Batty, telling him the new rules make it impossible for him to run on NRM's ticket.
I picked my nomination papers as an independent because, as I announced some time ago, it became untenable for me to try and contest within my party. Everything was done to make it impossible for me to do that, and I had no choice, therefore, but to run as an independent.
When you say it became untenable, were you rejected by the ruling National Resistance Movement?
No, but the rules were changed. They adopted new regulations, which were clearly in violation of the Constitution, which were in breach of the national laws regulating our elections. They imposed heavy fees, something that had not happened before within the party. And it was obvious that all this had been done just against one person, that is myself. So I really thought that it was meaningless to try and run within the party.
Mr. Mbabazi, there are some major political parties that have been in the opposition, like the Forum for Democratic Change. Why did you not go with those parties and instead going as an independent? Can you win as an independent candidate?
Yes, of course, there are opposition parties, but I could have formed my own party. I could have joined any of the opposition parties, but that was not my idea. I have stated very clearly that I stick to the core values of our struggle, the very principles upon which we founded the National Resistance Movement. And my contention is that the leadership of the party now has veered off course. They have tried to take the party off the principles that we fought for. I do represent the original NRM as we started it.
Are there silent supporters within the ruling party or the NRM that will support you in the election?
No doubt. Both silent and loud. There is no doubt about that. And of course, that explains why everything was done to try and prevent me from contesting within the party, because I think it was clear that the likelihood of my victory was very high.
The need for electoral reforms has been kind of a clarion call by some opposition members, and lack of that, they say there can be no transparent election. What is your view in terms of the need for electoral reforms?
Yes, I've spoken in favor of electoral reforms. I was the chairman of the Cabinet Committee on Constitutional Reform. However, having said that, I think the problem is not the laws. The problem is acting in breach of the laws. Because at the moment, the problem we face in Uganda is that the government and institutions handling many of these matters actually do not act in accordance with the law.
That was former Ugandan Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi explaining to VOA's James Batty why he's running as an independent candidate in Uganda's presidential election next year. Mbabazi was speaking from Kampala. In Zimbabwe, environmentalists are up in arms about the construction of shopping malls and residential housing on wetlands, which they say will affect water supplies in urban areas. Authorities say rural to urban migration puts pressure on the country's urban land, resulting in the building on wetlands. As Sebastian Moofu reports from Harare, environmentalists say if the trend continues, the city of Harare will run dry or will need more money to purify its water from open sources.
This is Monaville Flail, a 10-minute drive southwest of Harare's downtown, one of the few remaining wetlands in Zimbabwe's capital city. The place is mainly covered by green grass and a few trees, unlike other parts of the city. Officials say there are more than 250 species of birds here, some which travel from other parts of the world. Buildings, houses or upscale shopping malls have covered other swampy areas. Harare's population has more than doubled in the past 10 years and is estimated at more than 2 million. Most of the increase is due to rural urban migration. Another mall, dubbed Southern Africa's biggest, is set to shape up on wetlands in a posh suburb of Borodale, east of Harare. Jimmy Muropa, a conservation field officer, is worried by this development.
We are not against any form of development, but what we are basically saying is that those malls or houses should be actually properly sited way on higher ground where it is appropriate. We are for development, but on appropriate ground. Simple.
Scientists say wetlands purify and store water, which they gradually release into rivers and lakes. Harare Residents Trust says Zimbabwe's water rates are now high because of the destruction of wetlands. Precious Shumba is the head of the trust.
The monitoring framework is very weak. The Environment Management Agency does not follow laid down procedures when it comes to approval of buildings. There is so much corruption. There is no monitoring. The only relief that is available to EMA and the council is to charge penalties for violations, but they are not stopping, meaning to say our wetlands will continue to go.
Corruption has not been proven. The Environment Management Agency is a government body mandated to ensure sustainable use of the environment in Zimbabwe. Environment Agency spokesman Steady Kangata said his organization was trying to spread awareness of the importance of not constructing on wetlands. He dismissed allegations that Harare is lax on wetlands laws.
The Zimbabwean laws are very comprehensive when it comes to wetlands. Yes, Zimbabwe, we are part of the Ramsar Convention pertaining to the proper utilization of wetlands. And we have even gone further to domesticate the provisions of the Ramsar Convention. Wetlands are protected areas. But in the urban setup, you would find that there is pressure for infrastructural development.
Wetlands conservationist Dorothy Weckling says the wetlands are precious resources that cannot be destroyed.
These wetlands are our only source of water. If we take away all our wetlands of Harare, we are taking away our entire water source. What are we going to do for replenishing streams and rivers that feed into the dam wetlands, which are the source of water, should be left alone.
But with the demand for land, for housing and shopping malls increasing, Weckling's plea seems to be falling on deaf ears. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John, and nice to have you back.
Thank you. President
Salva Kiir held a six-hour meeting today with top Sudan South officials with the IGAD peace plan, but the government has yet to decide whether the president should, in fact, sign that compromise peace deal. IGAD mediators gave President Kiir an additional 15 days to meet with his constituencies before signing the compromise deal. The meeting was held at the State House to consult with all 10 governors and other senior government officials on whether he should sign the deal. South Sudan Minister of Cabinet Affairs, Martin Elia Lomaro, says they still have not made a decision on that matter. Mr. Kiir held a similar meeting last Sunday before heading to Addis Ababa, where he was expected to sign the agreement, but shocked onlookers and the international community by refusing to sign the deal on Monday. The SPLM in opposition is accusing South Sudanese government forces of launching new attacks on a rebel position in Unity State. James Gadet Dak is a spokesman for the SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar, and he says Sunday's attack targeted the town of Nialdu. Dak says it is a garrison and south of Bentu, about 30 kilometers. Dak says the opposition forces this time were able to repulse the government forces and drive them back. He says the SPLM-IO has had reports that civilians were caught up in that fighting and killed as the government forces retreated. The attack and the reported civilian deaths come a week after Machar and former detainee Paganamum signed a peace deal for South Sudan. And as you heard, President Kiir refused to sign that deal. And finally, the U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, is traveling to Khartoum tonight to speak with Sudanese officials about the conflict in Darfur and other contentious issues affecting U.S. bilateral relations with Sudan. This is Ambassador Donald Booth's second visit to the country. The U.S. State Department is calling it a routine diplomatic effort to build relationships and strengthen diplomacy. Booth is scheduled to address the humanitarian crisis in the Darfur area. The Sudan Foreign Ministry says they will also discuss the IGAD compromise deal in South Sudan. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Sudan by Lomerica Jasban.
Sudan is warm. Sudan is very cheaply in Africa. Sudan is number one in Africa. Wakani ta Sudan ketiwe. Gabaye ta Sudan say ketiwe. Nina kulu apol ewo, nina kulu nasiwa ide. Nina kulu apol ewo, nina kulu nasiwa ide. Oh, lakini dom dom waide, yekulu fi Sudani yakona. Sudani belet kepi fi Afrika e. Sudani number one fi Afrika e. Mwakani ita Sudani kepi e. Kabai ita Sudani. Say ketiwe, nina kulu akwa yewa, nina kulu nasiwa ide, nina kulu akwa yewa.
We have been listening to Lomerica Jasban with the song Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. It's good to be back. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.